Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Continuing with Part 1, The Yoga of Divine Works, Chapter 11, The Master of the Work, on page 254. A transcendent, who is beyond all world and all nature, and yet possesses the world and its nature, who has descended with something of himself into it, and is shaping it into that which, as yet, it is not, is the source of our being, the source of our works, and their master. But the seat of the transcendent consciousness is above, in an absoluteness of divine existence. And there too is the absolute power, truth, bliss of the eternal, of which our mentality can form no conception, and of which even our greatest spiritual experience is only a diminished reflection in the spiritualized mind and heart, a faint shadow, a thin derivate. Yet proceeding from it, there is a sort of golden corona of light, power, bliss, and truth, a divine consciousness, as the ancient mystics called it, a supermind, a gnosis, with which this world of a lesser consciousness, proceeding by ignorance, is in secret relation, and which alone maintains it and prevents it from falling into a disintegrated chaos. The powers we are now satisfied to call gnosis, intuition, or illumination, are only fainter lights of which that is the full and flaming source. And between the highest human intelligence and it, there lie many levels of ascending consciousness, highest mental or overmental, which we would have to conquer before we arrived there or could bring down its greatness and glory here. Yet, however difficult, that ascent, that victory is the destiny of the human spirit, and that luminous descent or bringing down of the divine truth is the inevitable term of the troubled evolution of the earth nature. That intended consummation is its raison d'être, our culminating state and the explanation of our terrestrial existence. For though the transcendental divine is already here as the Purushottama, in the secret heart of our mystery, he is veiled by many coats and disguises of his magic worldwide yoga maya. It is only by the ascent and victory of the soul here in the body that the disguises can fall away and the dynamis of the supreme truth replace this tangled weft of half-truth that becomes creative error. This emergent knowledge that is converted by its plunge into the unconscious of matter and its slow, partial return towards itself into an effective ignorance. For here in the world, through the gnosis, is there secretly behind existence what acts is not the gnosis, but a magic of knowledge ignorance. An incalculable, yet apparently mechanical, overmind maya. The divine appears to us here in one view as an equal, inactive, an impersonal witness spirit, an immobile consenting purusha, not bound by quality or space or time, whose support or sanction is given impartially to the play of all action and energies which the transcendent will has once permitted and authorized to fulfill themselves in the cosmos. This witness spirit, this immobile self in things, seems to will nothing and determine nothing. Yet, we become aware that his very passivity, his silent presence, compels all things to travel, even in their ignorance, towards a divine goal, and attracts through division towards a yet unrealized oneness. Yet, no supreme, infallible divine will seems to be there. Only a widely deployed cosmic energy or a mechanical executive process, prakriti. This is one side of the cosmic self. The other presents itself as a universal divine, one in being, multiple in personality and power, who conveys to us, when we enter into the consciousness of his universal forces, a sense of infinite quality and will and act and worldwide knowledge, and a one yet innumerable delight. For through him, we become one with all existences, not only in their essence, but in their play of action. See ourself in all, and all in ourself. Perceive all knowledge and thought and feeling as motions of the one mind and heart. All energy and action as kinetics of the one will in power. All matter and form as particles of the one body. All personalities as projections of the one person. All egos as deformations of the one and sole real I in existence. In him, we no longer stand separate, but lose our active ego in the universal movement. Even as by the witness who is without qualities and forever unattached and unentangled, we lose our static ego in the universal peace. And yet, there remains a contradiction between these two terms, the aloof divine silence and the all-embracing divine action, which we may heal in ourselves in a certain manner, in a certain high degree, which seems to us complete, yet is not complete, because it cannot altogether transform and conquer. A universal peace, light, power, bliss is ours, but its effective expression is not that of the truth consciousness, the divine gnosis. But still, though wonderfully freed, uplifted, and illumined, supports only the present self-expression of the cosmic spirit and does not transform, as would a transcendental descent, the ambiguous symbols and veiled mysteries of a world of ignorance. Ourselves are free. But the earth consciousness remains in bondage. Only a further transcendental ascent and descent can entirely heal the contradiction and transform and deliver. For there is yet a third intensely close and personal aspect of the Master of Works, which is a key to his sublimest hidden mystery and ecstasy. For he detaches from the secret of the hidden transcendence and the ambiguous display of the cosmic movement an individual power of the divine that can mediate between the two and bridge our passage from the one to the other. In this aspect, the transcendent and universal person of the divine conforms itself to our individualized personality and accepts a personal relation with us. At once identified with us as our Supreme Self, and yet close and different as our Master, Friend, Lover, Teacher, our Father, and our Mother, our Playmate in the great world game, who has disguised himself throughout as friend and enemy, helper and opponent. And in all relations and in all workings that affect us, has led our steps towards our perfection and our release. It is through this more personal manifestation that we are admitted to some possibility of the complete transcendental experience. For in him we meet the One, not merely in a liberated calm and peace, not merely with a passive or active submission in our works, or through the mystery of union with the universal knowledge and power filling and guiding us, but with an ecstasy of divine love and divine delight that shoots up beyond silent witness and active world power to some positive divination of a greater beatific secret. For it is not so much knowledge leading to some ineffable absolute, not so much works lifting us beyond world process to the originating supreme knower and master, but rather this thing most intimate to us, yet at present most obscure, which keeps for us, wrapped in its passionate veil, the deep and rapturous secret of the transcendent Godhead, and some absolute positiveness of its perfect being. It's all concentrating bliss, its mystic Ananda. But the individual relation with the divine does not always, or from the beginning, bring into force a widest enlargement or a highest self-exceeding. At first, this Godhead close to our being or immanent within us can be felt fully only in the scope of our personal nature and experience. A leader and master, a guide and teacher, a friend and lover, or else a spirit, power, or presence, constituting and uplifting our upward and enlarging movement by the force of his intimate reality, inhabiting the heart, or presiding over our nature from above, even our highest intelligence. It is our personal evolution that is his preoccupation. A personal relation with him that is our joy and fulfillment. The building of our nature into his divine image that is our self-finding and perfection. The outside world seems to exist only as a field for this growth, and a provider of materials or of helping and opposing forces for its successive stages. Our works done in that world are his works. But even when they serve some temporary universal end, their main purpose for us is to make outwardly dynamic or give inward power to our relations with this immanent divine. Many seekers ask for no more, or see the continuation and fulfillment of this spiritual flowering only in heavens beyond. The union is consummated and made perpetual in an eternal dwelling place of his perfection, joy, and beauty. But this is not enough for the integral seeker. However intense and beautiful, a personal, isolated achievement cannot be his sole aim or his entire experience. A time must come when the personal opens out into the universal. Our very individuality, spiritual, mental, vital, physical even, becomes universalized. It is seen as a power of his universal force and cosmic spirit. Or else, it contains the universe in that ineffable wideness which comes to the individual consciousness when it breaks its bonds and flows upward towards the transcendent and on every side into the infinite.